All right. Well, with that on the table, you know what I'm fixing to say. So we'll go ahead and get ready. And it goes like this. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is now chapter 9 of the book of Leviticus, or Vayikra. And this is the one that is called Parsha Shmini, because that word means eighth. And it says, Ve'yehi Bayom. So it came to pass on the day Ha Shemini, the eighth. So on the eighth day, Moshe called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel, and he said to Aaron, get yourself a bull calf for a chatat, a sin offering, and a ram for a burnt offering without blemish, and offer them before Yahuwah. And unto the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, you'll speak and you'll say the following. Take a he-goat for a chatat, and a calf and a lamb, both of the first year without blemish, for an olah, a burnt offering. And an ox and a ram for shalamim, for peace offerings, and a sacrifice before Yahuwah, and a meal offering, mincha, mingled with oil. For today Yahuwah is going to appear to you, or appeareth unto you. And they brought all of those things which Moshe had commanded before the tent of meeting, and kol ha'edat, all the congregation, drew near, and they stood before Yahuwah. And Moshe said, this is the thing which Yahuwah has commanded that you should do, and the glory of Yahuwah may appear to you. And then Yahuwah said to Aaron, draw near unto the altar and offer your sin offering, your burnt offering, make atonement for yourself and for the people. Present the offering of the people and make atonement for them as Yahuwah has commanded. So what we're going to see here is the actual ceremony that is going to begin Aaron as the high priest. He drew near the altar, he slew the calf of the chatat for himself. The sons of Aaron presented the blood to him. He dipped his finger in the blood, put it on the horns of the altar, poured out the blood at the base of the altar. All of this we've heard the process before. But the fat, the kidneys, the lobe of the liver, and the sin offering, he made smoke upon the altar, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. The flesh and the skin were then were burned with fire outside the camp. He then slew the burnt offering, and Aaron's sons delivered him the blood. He dashed it against the altar round about. They delivered the burnt offering unto him piece by piece, and the head. He made them smoke upon the altar. Then he washed the innards and the legs, made them smoke upon the burnt offering on the altar. And then finally the people's offering was presented. He took the goat of the sin offering, which was for the people. He slew it and offered it for sin as the first. Then the burnt offering was presented. He offered it according to the ordinance. And the meal offering was presented. And he filled his hand therefrom and made it smoke upon the altar besides the burnt offering of the morning. Then he slew also the ox and the ram, the sacrifice of shalamim for the people. And Aaron's sons delivered unto him the blood, and he dashed it again around the altar all about. The fat of the oxen, of the ram, the fat tail, that which covers the innards and the kidneys and the lobe of the liver. He put the fat on the breasts. He made the fat smoke upon the altar. And the breast and the right thigh Aaron waved for a wave offering before Yahuwah, again, as Moshe commanded. It says, then Aaron lifted up his hands toward the people, and he blessed them. And he came down from offering the chatat and the olah and the shalamim. And Moshe and Aaron went up into the tent of meeting. And they came out and blessed the people, and the glory of Yahuwah appeared unto all the people. All right, so this all sounds a lot like what he had said was going to happen, and it has. But we're going to pause because there's an interesting thing that happens next. Now, as you know, I like to highlight. I encourage you, if you've got a marker and want to, you can mark in your Bibles something that's really fascinating. That is one of the more notable Ot Bashim. Okay, Ot Bash, remember, Aleph Tav Beit Shin. Chiasm is the English word, but I like the Hebrew because Aleph Tav Beit Shin describes literally what it is. First and last, second to first, second to last. It's a picture of brackets, nested brackets or parentheses, and it's also this HTML tag, right? This biblical version of something which is dramatic because the same words are used. And you can ask yourself the question, well, what are they doing? They're setting off this thing within. So it's the thing within that we're going to point to and note the whole section here and how this comes together. This actually ends one chapter and begins the next in the English, but if I was putting the brakes in, I wouldn't have put them here necessarily, unless it was to mark this out. All right, so verse 24, end of chapter 9 says, and there came forth fire from before Yahuwah. So fire is ish, from before Yahuwah. And consumed, and that word is ve'tokel, the burnt offering upon the fat. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and they fell on their faces. So there came forth fire and consumed. And then we get this. All right, going to ask what's in the middle? Well, let me read the part that's right in the middle. And I'm tipping you off. The closed bracket's coming up right after this verse. Nadab and Abihu, uh-oh, now we remember, right? The two sons of Aaron, each of them took his censer, they put fire in it, had incense thereon, laid it there, and they offered deadly fire. No, it was called strange fire in the scripture, and it's Zarah is the word before Yahuwah, which he had not commanded them. So there it is, strange fire, not commanded. And then we get this, and it's going to sound familiar because we just heard almost exactly the same phrase. And there came forth fire from before Yahuwah, and it's the exact Hebrew wording, and devoured, consumed, not the fat upon the altar, the burnt offering, nope, them, Nadab and Abihu. And they died before, and literally this is before the face of Yahuwah. So what do we see here? Not just the brackets, but the fact that there came forth fire and consumed something. In one case, it's an offering, and it's an offering that was commanded. And in the other case, it's the sons of Aaron who were consumed by fire, and it's because they offered something which was not commanded and killed them. Then Moshe said to Aaron, "This is the thing which Yahuwah spoke, saying, through them that are nigh unto me, I will be sanctified. Kadosh, I'd be set apart. And before all the people, I will be glorified." And it's an interesting phrase here. It says, and Aaron held his peace. Aaron kept his mouth shut. Now, I can't help but think back. Remember when something happened with regard to the golden calf? And Aaron may have hearkened back and think, you know, I'm thankful. I'm blessed. I am... I've been spared to be alive. So he kept his peace. Moshe then called to Mishael and Elzaphan, sons of Uziel, the uncle of Aaron, and he said unto them, "Draw near, get your brethren, carry them out of here from the sanctuary before the camp." So they drew near, they carried them in their tunics out of the camp, as Moshe had said. So they take the bodies out. Then Aaron hears from Moshe, and Moshe says to him, "And unto Eleazar, and unto Ithamar, his two remaining sons, now his only sons, don't let the hair of your heads go loose. Don't rend your clothes, that you die not. And that he be not wroth, he, Yahuwah, with all kol ha'edah, with all the congregation. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which Yahuwah has kindled." So there's some interesting commentary on this, and essentially it's kind of like this is not a private thing. I realize you've lost your brothers or your sons, but this is something which has affected the entire house of Israel. Let them all have an element of wailing and gnashing of teeth for this burning which Yahuwah has kindled. "And you, meanwhile, shall not go out from the door of the tent of meeting, lest you die, for the anointing oil of Yahuwah is upon you." And they did, according to the word of Moshe. Then Yahuwah spoke to Aaron, and he said, and this is interesting. Oftentimes what we see is he speaks to Moshe, and Aaron gets the word, as does the congregation. In this case, says Yahuwah spoke to Aaron directly, and he said, "Do not drink any wine or strong drink, not you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tent of meeting, that you die not. This shall be a statute forever, huch olam, throughout your generations." And that, of course, is an interesting admonition. There's a lot of midrash, a lot of suggestion that, well, maybe this is because of what happened to Nadab and Abihu. It certainly seems related. Does it mean that they were drunk? Some would suggest it does. I don't believe that necessarily. Can't deny it because there's certainly a connection here. But I can't help but think it's something else. It may have a relation. It certainly has a relation. But it's not necessarily him saying don't do that because he's just saying don't do it, period. And here's the verse that I think really deserves to be highlighted. This is the charge. We see it for Aaron. We see it for his sons. We see it for his sons, 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 sons. We see it through the prophets later. You are to make a difference, call a distinction, teach even, the difference between the kadosh and the common, hachol. And between the unclean and the clean. The tahor, the clean, and the tameh. So this is a consistent charge of the priests. Teach people the difference between the holy and the profane, the clean and the unclean. So that you may do that. Do what? What we just said. Teach the children of Israel, he says, all the statutes, and this would be hahukim, which Yahuwah has spoken unto them by the hand of Moshe. And Moshe then spoke to Aaron and to Eleazar and unto Ithamar, the sons that were left over, still left, and he said, take that meal offering that remains of the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire and eat it without leaven besides the altar, because it is Kadosh Kedoshim, most holy. And you'll eat it in a holy place, because it's your due and your son's due of the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire, for so am I commanded. Now, the breast of waving and the thigh of heaving you shall eat in a clean place, you and your sons and your daughters with you, for they are given as your due and your sons' due out of the sacrifices of the shalamim, the peace offerings of the B'nai Israel. The thigh of heaving and the breast of waving shall they bring with the offerings of the fat made by fire to wave it for a wave offering before Yahuwah, and it is yours. So it gets waved first, then they eat it. And it's their due. It's literally their sustenance. And your sons with you as a due forever, as Yahuwah has commanded. And Moses diligently inquired for the goat of the sin offering, and behold, it was entirely burnt. They burned it up. He was angry with Eleazar and with Ithamar, the sons of Aaron that were left, and he said the following, why have you not eaten the sin offering in the place of the sanctuary? Because it is Kadesh Kodeshim. And he's given it to you to bear the Torahlessness, the iniquity of the congregation, to make atonement to them for them before Yahuwah. Behold, the blood of it was not brought into the sanctuary within. You should certainly have eaten it in the sanctuary as I commanded. So they're supposed to have eaten it. They didn't. Moshe is upset about this. And Aaron then says something to him. And what he says is obviously pretty telling. Here's what he said. Behold, this day they have offered their sin offering and their burnt offering before Yahuwah. And there have befallen me such things as these. Hey, I lost my sons, right? Now, if I had eaten that sin offering today, would it have been well-pleasing in the sight of Yahuwah? Moshe heard that, and it was, in fact, well-pleasing in his sight. I guess, among other things, what he's saying is, look, I've had a tough day. I'm not really that hungry. If I had eaten that, would it have been well-pleasing in his sight? Okay, so Moshe is, placated, I guess, at least, is a good way to put it. Then it says, Yahuwah spoke, chapter 11, first verse, unto Moshe and unto Aaron, and he said to them, speak to the B'nai Israel, and say, these are the living things which you may eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. So here we have it. This is the explanation, well-known, very famous. It's going to be repeated, but here it is in Leviticus, of what is food and what is not food. Okay, things you can eat, things you should not eat, aren't to eat, among all the living things that are upon the earth. Now, whatever parts the hoof and is wholly cloven-footed and chews the cud among the beasts, these are clean. These you may eat, he says. So there's two characteristics, a split hoof or a cloven foot and something that chews the cud. Now, notice it takes both, not one or the other, but both. Nevertheless, these you shall not eat of them, those that only chew the cud, or of them that part the hoof, in other words, they have a cloven foot, like the camel, because he chews the cud, but he doesn't part the hoof, he is unclean to you. So we're going to get some examples of animals that have a cloven hoof, but they are still, they chew the cud, but they do not have a cloven foot. So the camel has chews cud, but it is not cloven footed, so it's not food. The rock badger, because he too chews the cud, but he doesn't have a cloven hoof. He is unclean to you. The hare, or the bunny, the rabbit, because she chews the cud, but does not have a cloven hoof, part the hoof. She is unclean to you. The swine. Now here is the Bible doesn't outline it, but of course the Midrash will make this point. It is only the pork family, the porcine family, that among all the animals on the planet, has this characteristic. It has a cloven hoof, but does not chew the cud. Why? It's basically, this is what the scientists will say. It's got a single stomach. It is not designed to be an herbivore. It basically cleans up dead stuff. Again, that is extra scriptural, but it's interesting what it does say about the pig And, of course, there is some midrash on this, as you might expect, because this is the only animal that meets this. It looks clean, but it's not. So, essentially, I think the midrash has some interesting commentary. What they say is, look, he's deceptive, little fellow. You look at him and you think he might be okay, but you got to watch him to realize he is not food. So he's particularly bad because he's deceptive, in other words, is the claim. And in fact, it is true that at least this part is correct. Pigs are the closest DNA to human, so when it comes to things that we have the greatest difficulty with, parasites, diseases of any kind, jumping the species barrier, as it's called, pig is number one. And for many years it's been understood, prior to, of course, genetic engineering, now they base all kinds of things on that fact, but prior to genetic engineering, it was unheard of for a pandemic to happen that didn't come through pigs. All right, so what about the pig? Of their flesh you shall not eat, their carcasses you shall not touch. They are unclean to you. In other words, don't even touch pig skin. So how's that for football? Of these you may eat that are in the waters. Whatsoever has fins and scales in the waters, in the seas and rivers, you can eat them. So here it is, another double requirement. It's got to be both, not one or the other, but both. All the things that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, or that swarm in the waters, of all the living creatures that are in the waters, these are detestable unto you. So shellfish is a good example. Things that do not have fins and scales in the rivers and waters, they are detestable. And primarily, of course, you recognize there's a class of things, shellfish, shrimp, oysters, clams. They don't have fins, and they don't have scales, and they are detestable. They're detestable to you. You shall not eat of their flesh. Of their carcasses you shall have in detestation. So much for a lot of the things that people would say, oh, that's really great stuff, and he says, no, it's not food. Whatsoever has no fins nor scales in the waters, that is a detestable thing to you. So if it doesn't have either, it's particularly detestable, it sounds like. And these you shall have in detestation among the birds, the fowl. They shall not be eaten. They're a detestable thing. Now notice with birds, we don't get a general rule. What we get is a list of things that are detestable. You can look at them and say, well, there may be certain characteristics here, but it's... I would say it's not scriptural to draw a complete generalization. But on the other hand, if it looks like something in the list, I'm going to be happy not to eat it. So, among the fowls, the things that are not to be eaten, the great vulture, the bearded vulture, the osprey, the kite, the falcon after its kinds, every raven after its kinds. Let's pause. So far, we see a pattern. These are meat-eating and or carrion birds. And, again, they eat dead things, vultures in particular, obviously. And some of these are actually meat hunter birds, too, or birds of prey. Don't eat them. The raven, after its kinds, the ostrich. Now, the ostrich is interesting in the list. And, of course, it's one of the few places. Some English translations say ostrich. Others don't. So I'd say this is an interesting one. But ostrich, they'll eat most anything, too, we're told. The nighthawk, the sea mew, and the hawk after its kinds, the little owl, the cormorant, the great owl, the horned owl, the pelican, the carrion vulture, the stork, the heron after its kinds, the hoopoe, and the bat. Now, the botanist, or not the botanist, but the, anyway, the animal science types will say, oh, well, bats in a different family, that's a flying mammal, but it's kind of a rat with wings, too. All these wing-swarming things that go on all fours are a detestable thing unto you. So bugs, basically, that go about on all fours. Don't eat them. These you may eat of all the wing-swarming things that go about on all fours, which have jointed legs above their feet, wherewith to leap upon the earth. So here comes the one exception among the bugs that you can eat. And now everybody's waiting with bated breath to hear, oh, what can I eat? What answer? Here are the things you can eat. The locust, after its kinds. The ball locust, after its kinds. The cricket, after its kinds. The grasshopper, after its kinds. Now, a lot of folks will know, what is it? Fried grasshoppers and some other things. I've honestly never had them, but at least it's good to know they are food if necessary. But all winged swarming things, which have 4 feet, are a detestable thing unto you. And by these you become unclean. Whosoever touches the carcass of them shall be unclean until evening. And whosoever bears the carcass of them, or lifts it up and washes it, or carries it, shall wash his clothes and then be unclean until evening. Every beast which parts the hoof but is not cloven-footed, nor chews the cud, is unclean to you. Everyone that touches them shall be unclean. And whatsoever goes upon its paws among all the beasts that go on all fours, they're unclean to you. Whoever touches their carcass shall be unclean unto evening. So bears and dogs and cats in that category. He that bears the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. They are unclean unto you. Don't eat them. And these are they which are unclean to you among the swarming things that swarm upon the earth. The weasel, the mouse, the great lizard after its kind, the gecko, the land crocodile, the lizard, sand lizard, chameleon. These are they which are unclean to you among all the things that swarm. Whosoever touches them, even when they're dead, or when they're dead, shall be unclean until evening. And upon whatsoever any of them, when they're dead, falls, whether it's a vessel of wood or of clothing or whatever, shall be unclean, or skin or a sack. Whatsoever vessel it is, wherewith any work is done, it needs to be washed with water. It shall be unclean until the evening, then it shall be clean. So if you got an open vessel and a dead mouse, falls out of a ceiling rafter and goes plop in there, you better clean that out. And it's unclean until the evening. Every earthen vessel, though, where anything like that falls, whatsoever is in it shall be unclean, and that one you need to break. So the dead mouse falls into a pottery vessel on the cabinet, break it. Any food therein which may be eaten, on which water comes, is unclean. So water makes it unclean because it rinses whatever crud is in there. All drink in every such vessel that may be drunk shall be unclean. So you can kind of see the idea here. It's almost like the Bible is describing long before the concept of germs that something unclean falls into a liquid, and that liquid carries the uncleanness through it. Don't drink it, and the vessel needs to be cleaned, or if it's an earthen vessel, broken. And everything whereupon any part of their carcass falls shall be unclean. Whether it's an oven or a range for pots, it shall be broken in pieces. They're unclean, and they'll be unclean unto you. Nevertheless, so basically, if you cook a bear paw in an open crockery, yuck. All right, you get the idea here. There are things that we are told not to do, and what's ironic, of course, is most modern Christians would say, well, this is all dead and done away with. Doesn't matter. And the answer is, no, it's not. There was no time ever where that was said to be true. Nevertheless, a fountain or a cistern where there's a gathering of water, that can be clean, but also who touches their carcass shall be unclean. Now, if anything of their carcasses falls upon any sowing seed, which is to be sown, that's okay. Seed doesn't get contaminated, it's clean. But if water's put upon the seed, and now the carcass falls thereon, it is unclean unto you. Interesting. It's almost like, in a modern sense, we'd say, what is it? Is it suggesting there could be DNA contamination? And if any beast of which you may eat dies, he that touches the carcass thereof shall be unclean until evening. And he that eats of the carcass of it needs to wash his clothes and be unclean till evening. He also that bears the carcass shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. And any swarming thing that swarms upon the earth, it is a detestable thing, and it shall not be eaten. So caterpillars and whatever, don't eat them. Whatsoever goes upon its belly, whatsoever goes upon all fours, or what has many feet, again, like a centipede, even among all swarming things that swarm upon the earth, them you shall not eat. They are a detestable thing. You shall not make yourselves detestable with any swarming thing that swarms, nor shall you make yourselves unclean with them, that you should be defiled thereby. For ani Yehuah Elohekem, I am Yehuah your El. Sanctify yourselves, therefore, and you be kadosh, for I am kadosh. We see this repeated too. You be holy, for I am holy. It's ironic. A lot of Christianity will quote this verse, but they won't ask the question, why? Why does a pig sandwich not make me unclean before Yahuwah? It certainly doesn't make, well, answer? It does. He just said so. Nor shall you defile yourselves with any manner of swarming thing that moves upon the earth. For ani Yahuwah, I am Yahuwah that brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your Elohim. Therefore, here it is again, must be important, you shall be holy, for I am holy, kadosh. This, it says, is the Torah. Not just the law, folks, this is the instruction. It's bigger than law. He's given a lot of instruction about how you'll know what is food and what is not. This is the Torah of the beast, the instruction concerning the beast and the fowl and every living thing, every creature that moves in the waters, and of every creature that swarms upon the earth. And here it is again. Notice the connection. The idea of the Kohen, to teach, so that you can make a difference between the clean and the unclean, between the living thing that is food that may be eaten and the living thing that is not food and may not be eaten. And on that note, the Torah portion ends. And it's kind of fascinating, isn't it? There's so much in here, and there's this common thread of this idea of things that are set apart, things that the priests are supposed to know and teach, and some a pair of Kohanim, basically Nadab and Abihu, and what happened to them, and how that was set off by this idea of fire coming forth from before Yahuwah, things he had not commanded. And it ended up causing their death. And I'm going to suggest, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow, that there are some real interesting connections here that we want to make sure we don't miss, especially as we're coming into a time where some of these things may end up, and I can't help but think he's given them to us for a reason, be a matter of life and death. All right, so with that, I'll ask any questions or comments. Okay, so we had a question. I think we got that one. Oh, one more thing I will note. I remember two things, two quick stories. One, when we first started reading about this, and I asked myself a question, because about the only seafood that I ever liked, I've not been a big seafood fan most of my life, and never cared for oysters or shrimp are okay, but I didn't care for them that much, and I certainly wasn't any big thing to for me to give them up. But I thought, you know, the only thing I actually like is a scallop. What's a scallop? And I had to go look and find out. I had never seen a real, you know, scallop, and turns out, nope, scallop are also shellfish. So you might have known this. I had to realize it when I was, well, 30s, I guess, and don't eat them anymore. And finally, the other one, this one took us several years to figure out, marshmallows. Marshmallows may or may not be, and you got to look and see, because gelatin, most Jell-O, green Jell-O, hospital Jell-O, don't eat it. It's made with pig fat or pig something. Maybe it's pig toenails or something. But anyway, whatever it is, you don't want it. It's pig. And if it's there are two kinds of gelatin. You'll occasionally see, like, pills that people take that are encapsulation. Okay, I'm getting comments from the gallery here. But one is beef tallow gelatin, so bovine gelatin. So it can be made from cows. That's okay. That's clean. The other one, of course, obviously, is vegetable. So it can be clean as well. And finally, marshmallows. Did you know marshmallows have gelatin in them? So you got to have kosher marshmallows if you're going to do s'mores.